Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Kozura, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 115. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Kozura, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. Dave, how you doing? How's the Masters? We are recording this, full disclosure, here Sunday evening, so I don't believe the Masters is over, but I guess by the time people listen to this, they probably know who is wearing the green jacket.
Yeah, and for all practical purposes, Scotty Scheffler has this thing about wound up. He looks like he's got a four-shot lead on 17 or through 17 at this point here. So it feels like it's all academic at this point. And apologies for having to do this later Sunday night. I've got to go do some medical test on Monday morning, so I will be away. So we want to make sure we got this one in the can and out to everybody first thing on Monday. Hopefully no huge breaking news will happen between now and then. And we'll have, you know, definitely some good things to talk about in this show. I think maybe not as good as what we had in that last show. We got, and I guess we should start off too by saying we got a lot of great thank you for everybody who sent an email. We asked them to comment about that center deep dive that we did, Alex, and the rabbit holes inside of rabbit holes that we went down. And for the majority, I mean, we got a lot of emails in on this, and a lot of them were very positive. I think there are only a few, one or two of them that, you know, really didn't thoroughly enjoy it. It wasn't that it was all so negative, but that was a fun episode, and the response was quite over the top. We enjoyed that as well too. So thank you if you took a moment to send an email to us about that show.
Yeah, that was a really fun discussion, and hopefully it becomes relevant and pertinent based on who Pittsburgh drafts in terms of the center position. So we'll see how things shake out. But I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth at some other point later before the draft, which is only, a week and a half or so away. We're recording here April 14th. Day one starts April 25th. So excited for that. Excited for our final touches, evaluations, and thoughts on the 2024 NFL draft. And speaking of which, here, Dave wrote an article on Sunday morning, I should say. We always talk about the Blues Clues, and if you're unfamiliar with that term and how it's used for Pittsburgh Steelers drafting standpoint, those are the breadcrumbs that Pittsburgh has left with their longstanding history of draft trends, the benefit of having the same head coach in Pittsburgh since 2007, and Omar Khan, although only his second draft he's entering, being with the organization since 2001, you kind of get an idea of how this team operates, who they like, who they don't like, the positions they go after, pedigree, all of the things we talk about. But probably above all other elements when it comes to first round selections in the Pittsburgh Steelers are those pro day trips. We talk about the stat all the time. We'll mention it again, I'm sure, before the draft kicks off, that every Pittsburgh Steelers first round pick since 2010 has had either Mike Tomlin or the GM or both at their pro day. Pittsburgh loves to see these guys in person, see them interact with coaches and teammates, go out to pro day dinners, get to know families, really get the full picture of the prospect as well as the on-field workout they participate in. So wrote the article this morning kind of trying to outline if that history holds true, and it may not this year, we'll talk about that, but you know, who are the names that they could look at? And there's a couple of them, but Dave, just kind of off the top to let you jump in here, do you think the Blues Clues will hold this year?
I mean, my gut tells me it will. I'm very much a traditionalist as far as following this aspect of it. And, you know, you go all the way back to Ziggy Hood was the last time that you know, they didn't do this. And at that time, they picked what was that, 32nd overall that year? And, you know, you kind of wondered if if that might have been a result of the board not breaking exactly the way they maybe had hoped that it would have, or maybe they didn't get a chance to trade up to get one of the guys. Who knows, this far removed. But until we have another instance of where that part of the Blues Clues doesn't play out, it's really hard to get yourself to go against it. Now it feels like it will has the opportunity to be tested, you know, this year, especially at the center position with maybe a guy like Barton or maybe a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson. But you know, and until it happens, it's hard to go against it.
And if that trend continues, then that first-round pick will be from one of these four schools. Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin, Mark Conn only traveling to four pro days this year, a very low number compared to years past, but they were at Georgia, Clemson, Alabama, and Michigan. And so here are the six names I came up with in terms of realistic possibilities at 20, even if it's maybe a bit of a stretch one way or the other, a bit earlier, a bit later than projected to go. But these are, to me, the six names that would be the candidates to continue that trend. From Georgia, offensive tackle Amarius Mims, and wide receiver Ladd McConkey. I know McConkey viewed maybe late first round, early day two, but stretching it, you know, trying to have a bit broader lens, putting McConkey on that list. Clemson, Nate Wiggins, that's the guy if there is going to be a guy there. Alabama, J.C. Latham, the tackle. The corners, Terry and Arnold, and Kool-Aid McKinstry. Latham, Arnold projected by most to go before 20, but maybe they slip based on the depth that tackle and receiver and quarterback in this class. And then Michigan, I really don't see a realistic first-round option. Won't be J.J. McCarthy. He'll be gone by then. I think even in the most stretchy scenario, it's too early for a Roman Wilson or Mike Sanders still. So to me, Dave, those are the six names.
Yeah, and even when you get to Ladd McConkey, it feels like it would be a little bit of I mean, you have to have his name on there, I think, but it would be. I'll tell you this: Ladd McConkey's not going to be in my final mock draft as the choice, and really, I can't see myself putting Kool-Aid McKinstry in that spot. Can a guy like J.C. Latham or Terrion Arnold, you know, slide for whatever reason? And be sitting there and you know, be something that you can't turn down. I suppose that's a possibility. I think when you look at the whittled down list that you have as a more realistic group, I come away with four names there. Amarius Mims, Nate Wiggins, J.C. Latham, and Terrion Arnold should something happen and he fall. To me, that feels like if you subscribe to indeed subscribe to the theory of Tomlin and Conn needing to be at the pro day, those would be the four. Now, look, you and I will be hearing about it for sure if it is somebody not on, you know, that someone, you know, like a Barton or someone like a Jackson Powers Johnson. You know, obviously you would, Not that you could use it as an excuse, but at least you could, because Jackson Powers Johnson was brought in for a pre-draft visit because he's way out there on the other side of the world. there where his pro day is and all like that. You could kind of build in a little bit of an excuse when it comes to that. But I feel, you know, if we're going to subscribe to, you know, historically what's happened here, the four names are Mims, Wiggins, Latham, and Arnold should he fall.
I agree. I think those are the top candidates. I hadn't really studied as much on Kool-Aid McKinstry, not really being talked about as much, getting overshadowed, I think, by Arnold, by Quinyon Mitchell, maybe even a bit of Cooper DeJean lately, now that he's healthy and working. I know McKinstry had he will have the upcoming surgery. He did work out at his pro day or combine or one of the two. They discovered that broken bone in his foot, but should be good for training camp. But really, I mean, that's a name we haven't talked about much. He is checking a lot of boxes, but you're right. Does not really feel like he's going to be the pick.
Yeah. And then, you know, another thing I've tracked over the years are these corners that are under 6 foot in the first round, you know, especially if they're, What did he come in? 5'11" and a half and all like that. I mean, he's put together the tapes, you know, makes him one of those borderline first round, top of the second round, type of guys. What is his arm length there? Not as long, is he, with the arms?
Yeah, I'll check here. But I mean, him and Arnold aren't tremendously large guys. I think McKinstry is bigger than Arnold. But I mean, they are just really, you know, high end cover corners. You watch, when I watched Brian Thomas this year, great tape overall. That Alabama game, he was super quiet because of what Arnold McKinstry did against him.
Let's see. It looks like his combine was 32 on the arms, and at the pro day, 31 7/8 there. We'll talk about it in a little bit. You have started your annual What the Steelers Look For series and all like that. Does it feel like Kool-Aid's going to work himself into that? I know
he didn't.
Well, here's the thing. He didn't do the short shuttle, three cone or the bench press. So there's going to be missing boxes for him to officially hit the Alex Cazorla What They Look For. But
what did he run?
Pro day, Dane Brugler has him at 4.47.
Okay. That should check. But yeah, just unfortunately, it's become more commonplace, even with including pro days, which I have over the last 2 years. If you're not participating, you can't check every box because you're just not involved in all the activities.
Look, is there, because of where his supposed draft stock is, and because he's at a big time program in Alabama, because now did they bring him in? Was he one of the ones that's brought in?
McKinstry?
Yeah.
No. No. Him nor Arnold have come in that we know of.
Right. But they were at the pro day. So that box is checked there. I mean, no, you can't ignore it. No.
Right. But I think Arnold, I think it's more interesting if Arnold were to fall, he's kind of viewed as, I think there's some developmental things and refinement in his game needed. He's not played, I think, as much football as McKinstry, but a really interesting guy is Arnold. He's physical. He's tough. Not as big as McKinstry, but he can certainly cover.
Oh yeah, he can, and it will be interesting to see once you get past your top guys like obviously Quinion Mitchell you would expect to go early in this thing. Dane Brugler obviously has Arnold listed as his top corner, and then after that you got Nate Wiggins. You know, a lot of people thinking that Nate Wiggins won't even be on the board come the time the Steelers pick it 20th overall, and then he's got Cooper DeJean listed as number 4 overall here, and then you hear people like Greg Cosell think that look, DeJean's more likely to, you know, have to be that more versatile player, maybe even make a move to safety there. And then after him, then you get into Kool-Aid McKinstry and he's got Mike Sanders still. Then you get into Rake Straw out of Missouri after that. So it starts thinning out a little bit after that until you get to kind of those middle, that next tier of guys that we've been talking quite a bit about, like Andrew Phillips and Max Melton, guys that you could think that could play inside.
Right. Yeah, those are, you know, day two type of slot options once you talk to the Phillips out of Kentucky and Melton out of Rutgers. So anyway, that's the list. We'll check it. And, you know, whether it's certainly if it's broken, and we acknowledge we've done this in the past. We're not incredibly rigid about it. They could break the streak. It is likely to happen at some point. And if there is a year for this streak to end because they were only at 4 pro days, this is the year for that to happen.
Who would be the guy that would most likely break the streak?
I think it's going to be, we can go to the whole center versus tackle debate. I'm kind of leaning the tackles. If it's a Fuaga, if it's Fontenot from Washington, I think it's, I'll put it this way. It's a West Coast offensive lineman, whether it's Powers Johnson. I don't want to rule out Barton either. I think it's certainly possible, but just in terms of kind of the bucket to put him into, right. I think tackle they've looked at so heavily and the tea leaves are trending towards tackle in the first round. I think that's where you look at Fuaga from Oregon State, Fontenot from Washington. If you do go inside, you got Powers Johnson from Oregon. I think there's debate about all those guys. Fuaga doesn't have the length that this team typically prioritizes. Fontenot, he's a left tackle. You're going to play him at a right tackle, and Powers Johnson, some not viewing him as a first round pick. Maybe this sounds cliche, but I think it's kind of hard to find out who that first round guy this year is going to be. I felt much more confident where Pittsburgh would go in the first round last year than I do this year in terms of the name that they're going to target.
I mean, it feels like it's going to be an offensive lineman though, right?
It does, but how do you narrow it down right from there in terms of, like, last year I felt I had even written maybe 2 weeks before the draft that if this, I think there's a good chance they trade up, and if they do trade up, it's going to be for one of two names, Parrish Johnson, the tackle from Ohio State, or Broderick Jones. And it was Broderick Jones, they moving up three spots for him. This year, I don't have that degree of confidence in terms of where they're targeting round one.
Well, remember too, last year though, you know, a lot of people had convinced themselves that Broderick was going to go off earlier than than he did. And a lot of people weren't convinced that the Steelers would go up to go get him, you know?
Sure.
Even though a lot of signs pointed to him potentially being the guy, there was still some level. But look, you never
know. There's always uncertainty.
You never know where any of these guys really go, right?
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you feel more confident this year or last year, you personally, in terms of where you think they'll go if you had to give out, let's say, one or two names, if you had to just pick one or two out of a hat? Do you feel more confident this year offering those names or last year?
You mean just when in reference to the Steelers pick?
Yeah, the pick of 20 in terms of who they're going to take. Do you feel more confident if you had to get when you do your mock draft, for example, when you put that name in?
I'll tell you what. I bounced around up until the last minute last year in my head before I settled. Broderick Jones was definitely a guy that was in my head. And I'm trying to even think who else was.
It was him, Darnell Wright. There was the corners, Christian Gonzalez, with I think Porter Jr. at 17. Those were a lot of the names, others as well.
Right. I think I had it narrowed down to Porter Jr. and Broderick Jones until I had an epiphany in the shower. And,
okay.
And I said, you know, it feels too much. And that, you know, obviously that ended up being my guy. Now, I didn't know whether or not for sure they would have to trade up to get him, but he was the guy that I had as the first pick in my draft last year. So, I don't find myself bouncing around as much, at least a week and a half out. You know, maybe something happens here in the next week and a half. I wish Wiggins just had a little bit more sand in his pants.
Sure. I wonder in relation to Porter, you know, Porter was bigger and heavier and certainly longer, and that's a big difference. But I think in terms of just some baseline prototypes, they were pretty similar. High-end man cover corners with ball skills. Although Wiggins, I think, has had more ball production than Porter, who had one pick at Penn State. But guys that weren't particularly great against the run and weren't known as fantastic tacklers. Maybe Porter a bit more so than Wiggins. I think Wiggins can tackle. I just think he's been inconsistent with his run fits, his discipline, and the weight is a concern. Mm-hmm. So,
and the thing that had most of us too hung up for quite a while on Joey Porter Jr. potentially being the guy last year too, because the bloodline trend and all like that. But you don't have an overarching really name, I don't think, in when following the Blues Clues that you could tie a wagon to as far as the bloodline.
Of the six names that we mentioned from the Blues Clues, Mims, McConkey, Wiggins, Latham, Arnold, and McKinstry, who would be your leader? If I told you, Dave, one of those six will be the pick, who do you think that guy would be?
Oh, Mims.
Agreed. I think that is the one name that still stands out, literally and figuratively, given his monster size. Again, it goes back to, do you trust him based off the tape, off of 8 games, less than 900 career snaps to make him the face of your draft class?
Right. And look, I mean, it this team could use another, you know, guy, you know, to play. Look, it pieces in nicely together, even if he's not a day one starter. As we've said several times, I don't think whoever you take, whoever, you know, if they draft a tackle, I don't care if it's even first, second, or third round this year. You got to go into camp thinking that this guy can compete for at least give him an opportunity to compete for a job. If he doesn't win it, he doesn't win it. But obviously, if you got a first round draft pick tied up into position, you're thinking at some point that's going to happen, where you, and especially if the kid ends up playing at right tackle, because you want to see Broderick Jones get over the left tackle as soon as possible.
Sure. There's a lot of reasons to play that guy as soon as possible. A, to move Jones over. B, because first round picks play. And C, this team has a lot of needs. If you take a first round pick who sits, you've addressed a need on paper, but not in your actual lineup. And you haven't used that on another position where a guy might be giving you snaps right away.
And here's the thing. You can make an argument. I mean, you don't know exactly where Mims might go in the pecking order either. You know, maybe, sure, maybe there's a team, and maybe you never know if there's a team that might jump the Steelers, you know, to go get that guy at 18 or 19 or what have you, you know? So,
yeah, if you look past the experience, he's a great prospect.
Right, for sure. So, but I would and have thought of Mims of being as the leader in the clubhouse for a little bit now.
he wins this year's Steelers box checking award. He checks the boxes from the draft standpoint better than anybody else. Does that mean he'll be the pick? No, but he does check all those boxes as well as any name in this class. Let me ask you a harder question, Dave. Okay, Mims is one out of those six. Who's number two?
Feels like Wiggins.
That's where I would lean as well. What about Latham? I know Latham is viewed as this, like he'll be gone, but he didn't test in this process. There's a bunch of good tackles. Again, quarterbacks, receivers are going to push some of these guys down. Some of the edges are going to go, including his teammate Dallas Turner from Alabama. I don't think it's crazy to think that Latham could fall.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the question either, especially if Mims ends up going ahead of him, you know?
Sure, sure. And even if not, I mean, listen, if there's four tackles that are off the board by then, it doesn't have to be Latham. You might have Alt, Fashanu from Penn State, Fuaga, and Fontenu. And depending on what you want to call Graham Barton, he could be gone too. And so they're going to be, you know, that many offensive linemen taken when you factor in knowing that four quarterbacks will be gone, at least three receivers. Brock Bowers likely gone, a couple of corners, maybe two edge guys. Eventually, somebody's going to have to fall.
All right, who does this team take if Mims and Latham are both on the board at 20?
Ooh, very good question. Again, it kind of goes off of just it all goes back to comfort level on Mims. If you are comfortable and can get past a lack of experience, he should be your guy because the highs are that high. The upside is tremendous. You know, Mims, like Latham, a big guy. I think Latham is kind of conventionally the better mauler in the run game. Mims does not maybe quite have that nasty streak consistently and maybe has to work on pad level a bit and finish. But obviously, he's a monster of a tackle. The length is fantastic. When he's healthy, he is athletic. There's a ton of upside with him. So I would lean Mims if they're sold on the experience.
Yeah, I would as well.
So that's the study. We'll see if it holds true. And we'll certainly talk about it, whether it does or not, when the pick is made on Thursday night. Dave, I want to continue draft talk here in a second, but I want to pivot to the most amount of news that occurred on Sunday, which is still very light overall right now, but a lot of IU talk, and I know that some people are tired of it, and I'm at this point just kind of saying, okay, when it happens, whatever happens, happens. We'll just kind of cross that bridge. But rumors came out Sunday morning that IU could asked for a trade, and so that obviously kind of got Steelers Nation in a, you know, tizzy over, you know, is he truly wanting out? Does this accelerate potential trade talks? But then his agent took to Twitter to refute that report, telling the initial reporter you need better sources, effectively saying that IU has not asked for a trade. So things really haven't changed substantially, but there's been some speculation and some responses on the IU front.
And it wasn't a quote unquote reporter. I mean, you got so many Twitter. Yeah. Twitter gives the allows for a platform to people to rise up. The more noise that they take, the noisier they try to get sometimes. And I think this is a case of this. And look, I love when something comes out and gets either refuted like that, because it tends to calm things down a little bit overall. Here is, and what, you know, people are tired of us talking about Brandon Ayuk. I get it, all like that. I will just put, and I wrote about because the name of T. Higgins is also back kind of in the news and all. And even he said, I think at some camp or something, that he foresees himself staying with the Bengals or something. I ended up writing an article about this on Saturday evening about things we'd likely see happen with the Steelers ahead of them actually trading for one of these two guys here. And here is the main thing everybody should be focused on when it comes to these two in particular, Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins. Can you come up plausibility wise with a deal getting done for whatever it looks like, assuming either one of those teams were to try to trade either one of these wide receivers? Yes. From a cap position, it's a little messier now from the Steelers because they don't have the cap room that they had several weeks ago when I first posted my plausibility of the Steelers trading for Brandon Ayuk. All right. Even so, as I like to say now, teams, if they badly want a player, they can make it work cap-wise somehow, some way, something. Let's see. Adam Schefter right now is reporting Bengals franchise tag wide receiver T. Higgins, who requested to be traded. Anticipate. Okay, he's just reemphasizing what he had said earlier in the day there, that he foresees himself playing for the Bengals. Okay, back to my thoughts here. You can theorize plausibility-wise all aspects of a trade to Pittsburgh for one of these two guys. The hardest part and the thing that everybody needs to be focused on the most when it comes to either one of those two guys is the contract that would follow, that would have to immediately follow trading for one of those two guys. And that would obviously, the Steelers, A, would, if once again they traded for one of these two guys, they would have the contract situation work. They would get permission, talk to the agents, get the contract all settled before actually trading for them. Second, that what that contract would look like makes this thing the hardest thing to swallow. Now, maybe you listening to this, wherever you are, think that it doesn't matter. New regime, Omar Khan, you can't go off of what this team has done before. But I'll tell you right now, if whatever the contract would look like for Brandon Ayuk or T. Higgins would more than likely make either one of those players either the most the highest paid player on the team in average yearly value or the second highest paid player on the team in average yearly value. That in and of itself would be a stop the presses. You write a whole two or three articles somewhere around that actually happening for them bringing an outsider in, making them the highest paid or the second highest player on the team in the hierarchy, just because the Steelers don't do that sort of thing. The second thing would be the guaranteed money aspect of it. You would think that one of Brandon Ayuk or T. Higgins, as part of getting a deal done, is wanting some aspect of more than the first-year money, i.e. 2024, fully guaranteed. And if the Steelers went that route in the case with either one of them, that would, especially with them being an outsider, not being a homegrown product, that would be another stop the presses moment. Now, if you can get past either one of those two things happening, that player being the first or second highest paid player on the team as an outsider, and two, the guaranteed money aspect of it, well, then maybe there's some sense of your hope is still alive. But to me, that is the biggest. You can make the trade happen however you want to make it happen from every other aspect of this, compensation, cap, whatever. But the hardest thing that it, and it's, I mean, this isn't new. The hardest thing to get past out of all of this would be what that contract would look like for either one of those two players.
And that's why, for example, the L'Jarius Sneed deal to Tennessee probably took longer than people thought, even though it was pretty well settled and established the Chiefs were going to trade L'Jarius Sneed right after tagging him. But they just had to wait for a team that could and was willing to do the contract that Sneed wanted, which was, of course, a massive deal.
Right, right. So that to me, out of all this, when it comes to, and look, it's going to be a situation, whoever trade, if they ended up traded either one of them, which right now it doesn't feel like either one of those guys have been traded, but it's been a crazy offseason when it comes to wide receivers on top of it here. But the hardest thing to get past, and has been the hardest thing to get past out of all this when it comes to the Steelers specifically trading for either one of these two guys, would be the actual contract and the contract terms and the end product of that.
Let me just ask you one last question on Ayuk. Hypothetically, if he were to be traded, do you think it almost has to happen before the draft? Is there any chance it could happen later this year post-draft?
Yeah, you would think with this wide receiver class and all, the 49ers would like to go a different route. But, I mean, they do have Juwan Jennings, and I mean, they've got a pretty nice there's nothing. I wouldn't write it in. Write it in ink that if they got past the draft and still were unable to get something done with Ayuk, that that they definitely wouldn't trade him.
Yeah, it's hard to say absolutely, but I think, as you said, ideally you'd do it before the draft or even during the draft, as we saw with AJ Brown, so that you could get that replacement right away as opposed to post-draft where you really can't replace a guy of his talent. But if he makes a big enough stink, I imagine he won't be at OTAs, the voluntary stuff, and probably hold in for training camp. I mean, you know, if he does not get the deal, he'll make it very clear that he wants a new contract, even post-draft.
And obviously the problems with Higgins, specifically with the Steelers, you know, would the Bengals really even trade him within division to the Steelers? That would be a hurdle in and of itself. And the second thing is because he's wearing the franchise tag, that's a higher cap number right now, which makes it even tougher to kind of try to work around. You could still do it if you're the Steelers, if push came to shove with the cap, you know, and restructuring and all things like that. And the other thing related to that is because he is wearing the tag, there's a July 15th deadline to get a deal done with him. So look, any team, if indeed the Bengals were to trade Higgins, they'd probably do so with the contract already worked out. And obviously such a deal would probably happen before July 15th.
Sure. But as you said, you know, Cincinnati, I think it'd be pretty crazy to deal him to Pittsburgh and face him twice in 2024.
Mm-hmm. Right. At this point, stranger things have happened, but it feels unlikely that either one of these two guys are going to end up in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Ayuk a better chance than Higgins, but still just, you know, a smaller chance. Don't bank on it. That's for sure.
Okay.
All right, getting back to the NFL draft here. Again, I'm not entirely sure when this episode is up. It may be posted before the article is live Monday morning, but Dave, it is truly draft season because I am beginning my What the Pittsburgh Steelers Look For series in terms of historical trends and really benchmarks for basically minimum requirements of what they've drafted at each, you know, key position since the Mike Tomlin era began in 2007. We are starting things off with offensive tackle, full article on the site up Monday morning, given that offensive tackle has been looked at so heavily by the team. A lot of those first round prospects we mentioned just a little bit ago, and the depth of the class overall and the talent that's there. So three names checked every single box. I think one is especially interesting for Pittsburgh, but the three who checked every box from the What They Look For study are Joe Alt from Notre Dame, Frank Crum from Wyoming, and Blake Fisher, also from Notre Dame, who Pittsburgh brought in for a visit, has played right tackle opposite of Joe Alt. I think Fisher is the name to really watch here. Alt will be gone before 20. Crum, interesting guy. That's a later round selection, though. But Fisher, day two type, but checking a lot of boxes Pittsburgh looks for.
Remember me mentioning it, not that I think it's going to happen or anything like that, but remember me mentioning Frank Crum throughout this process a couple of times, mm-hmm. especially coming out of the combine. They're a real likable kid too. If you saw the interview on during the combine and all like that, it's interesting that he checks all these boxes here. I kind of had an idea if he did everything, he might check those boxes. Alt, it's not surprising that he checks them. Blake Fisher, I mean, look, he's a guy we've sort of had our eye on throughout this thing. Tell the people though why a couple of these guys like Mims and Latham, why specifically these first round guys, why they're not in these final three here.
Sure. One issue for this position and all the others is a lot of these guys in this day and age, and I'm even using pro day data, which I used to never do, but realized at this point because there are so few guys working out fully at the combine, I'll use all the data available, but many of them just aren't participating fully. And I do think that is, in one sense, to a prospect's detriment. I think, you know, people say, oh, who cares about a short shuttle time? Not that Pittsburgh is drafting based off by What They Look For study, of course, but when you talk about, you know, metrics you can create, RAS and other, you know, advanced analytics that can kind of tell you about an athlete's athleticism and what he projects to at the NFL level based off that score of success or not, when you don't participate, you don't have that data. You're just lacking all the information available on a player. But long story short is, a lot of the top names did not fully work out.
Latham, I have that trademark. You can't use long story short.
Yeah. I will send you the royalty check in the mail. You will get it for 14 right. cents.
Yeah. 18 cents a pop. All right.
Yeah. JC Latham did not test at all. Amarius Mims did not bench or do the shuttle drills. He had that hamstring injury that still limited him throughout the process. Fuaga did miss in length, but did not test in bench or shuttle drills. Fontenot did not make the height requirement, which is 6'5". Fontenot is 6.036, but he also did not do the shuttle drills, the short shuttle, or the three cone. Most offensive linemen are not doing those, unfortunately, so it does create incomplete data for us.
All right, who of those guys, even had they tested, weren't going to check all the boxes because of height, weight, arm length, hand size? Yeah,
Latham and Mims, from a size standpoint, no surprise, they checked every box. Fuaga did not have the length. He said, 33.5 in Pittsburgh's benchmark I have here, which the criteria did not change this year. Actually, what is Fuaga? He's 33 1/8, I think, right? Because my benchmark is 33.5. And typically, Pat Myers wanted longer offensive lineman Broderick Jones, 34 3/4. Dan Moore, 34.5. The last duck, Moore was not drafted. Meyer was not here when Pittsburgh drafted Moore, I don't believe. But point is, he does prioritize length. But yeah, Fontenot missed height and Fuaga missed length.
Okay. All right. I love when all these kids do everything.
Me too.
And it's disappointing. And I understand having to use pro day data, and we're probably going to have to start using more of that moving forward. But I, especially when you're talking about the top of the guy, you know, guys in the top half of maybe a position group, or even the top, you know, 10 of a position group specifically, it's disappointing when you don't have a complete profile on them, at least on the analytics. You know, this side of it.
Sure. You would like to have as much data as possible for all these prospects, but that's where we are at. Linemen, six of them who were one box away. I always like to put the guys who missed in just one category that came super close to checking every single box. Again, six of those names. Javon Foster from Missouri, he missed in bench. He did participate, but only put up 18 reps. Our benchmark is 20. Delmar Glaze from Maryland, he missed in height. And then four players missing because they did not participate in this drill. Garrett Greenfield did not bench. Patrick Paul from Houston did not do the broad. But Roger Rosengarten from Washington, the other Washington tackle, the right tackle, he did not do the three cone. If he had done the three cone, he would have checked that for sure, because right. The three cone mark is, you know, it's 8.15. You gotta be really slow to not make that that box check. And then Walter Ruse from Oklahoma did not bench. So Rosengarten, I think, is the one really interesting name from that other list.
Yeah, we have talked about him a couple of times throughout this process as well, too. If the Steelers do not go tackle in the first round, he, along with, I think, Blake Fisher, mm-hmm. Are the two that stick out to me. Even more so than before, right now, because obviously the interest in them and Rosengarten specifically, it feels like if the Steelers don't go and they miss out on several of those top tackles, that those two guys would be the guys to have your sights on in second, third round, I guess.
Yeah, right around in there. And Fisher, you know, if he's a third round guy at 84, he's young, he's 20, maybe 21. Developmental type. I didn't love his tape, but I understand hopefully he'll be a better version of himself in 2 to 3 years. So that may be a guy you draft in the third round. He actually has played a bit of left tackle. He was initially a left tackle before I think Alt came along, and then he flipped back over to the right side. So a little bit of versatility there, but that's a name in the circle if they do not go tackle in round one.
All right. My only thing is, as we go through these, is I hope we're not talking a lot about, well, we got incomplete data here. A couple of the guys that we thought, even had they done the drills, would have. I understand people not missing them because of the height, weight, arm, and you know, or hand or something like that. But I hate to see guys not make it because they didn't do, you know, short shuttle, three cone, those kind of things. And unfortunately, we're in an era now where we're probably going to see more and more of that.
Oh yeah, I was watching, I think, a pro day video of a guy doing a drill, and it took me off guard for a second. I was like, "What is this?" It was the long shuttle, the 60-yard cone, which you never see anymore. But there was one guy at some pro day, small school, I think, you know, not exactly a big name prospect, doing it. And the article was like, it would have been the second best, you know, long shuttle score of anybody at the combine. I'm like, yeah, because no one does that drill. It was like four people that did it, so. Kind of funny there, but yeah, I mean, that drill is already essentially obsolete. I don't think it's even mentioned on NFL Combine, you know, on NFL.com, the Combine site anymore. And yeah, we're not really seeing guys, especially with the short shuttle and broad. I mean, those things are done by maybe 2/3 of the field, and so many guys are just skipping out on them entirely.
All right, so it feels like Rosengarten and once again, Blake Fisher are guys to watch after the first round if the Steelers don't grab a tackle.
Agreed. Next up, I put out the call for the article to let me know what position you want me to look at next. I'll try to get to all the major ones Pittsburgh shown interest in. I'm thinking wide receiver, though. I think receiver would be a very interesting one, given the need, given the interest and the talent in this class.
Yeah, and how complete does that list look when it comes to guys in short shuttles and three cones?
Right. We will find out. So that'll probably be the next, but I'll get your guys' feedback and go from there. All right, Dave, what else here to talk about? Again, it's recording this year Sunday, not as much occurring overall. Jeremy Fowler tweeting, very similar to what you mentioned earlier. The Bengals have made clear behind the scenes they have no plans to trade T. Higgins, want another run at a Super Bowl with Jamar Chase and Higgins on the outside. So when he was officially tagged, Higgins was, we thought maybe that was going to be a trade situation, but I think even compensation would be tough because of the contract. And again, such a great receiver class. Well, all these teams are going to sit there and say, I'll just go draft somebody instead of having to go pay and trade for T. Higgins.
The most interesting thing, if he does remain with the Bengals on a new contract, is what that contract is and how it does look like in guaranteed money past the first year, because that's always been the Bengals, along with the Steelers and the Packers, are the three teams that still try to hold the line in the sand when it comes to that.
Yeah, or does he just play out the tag and they just let him go after this year? They got to pay Chase. I mean, I don't know, but it sounds like the framework is at least for this team to try to make a run in 2024.
Right. And I have not paid attention to their cap situation to know whether or not they absolutely have to get him done. And look, I mean, he wants it. He's one of those ones that would probably hold in too. During camp, you know, if he doesn't get a deal done. So then you worry about that and the spin off of that, the distraction aspect and all like that.
Yeah. And I assume he will not be there for OTAs and will have no obligation to be there for the mandatory minicamp, right? Because he technically will not be under contract, assuming he has not signed the franchise tag.
That's true.
So just, but also the Bengals, unlike the 49ers, the Bengals don't have the receiver depth and the overall offensive skill talent. I mean, they have Burrow and Chase, but they don't have the completeness that the 49ers have, where if they lost Ayuk, they could still be a really good offense. The Bengals, of course, can be a good offense. Burrow comes back healthy, but you know, it's Higgins and Chase. Those are the two guys now in that passing game.
And then once again, backtracking here, the July 15th deadline on him is obviously before camp. So,
right.
You know, that's a line in the sand before he even gets to camp. And obviously if he gets past July 15th, doesn't have a contract. I mean, if he hasn't signed, you know, the tender or whatnot, you know, he still might not take part in camp because not want to hurt himself, you know.
Sure. But I think as he recognized, as the reporting indicates, that the Bengals have no appetite to trade him. So I assume trading him would involve a massive massive trade offer that they're unlikely to receive.
Right.
Dave, I have an article. They'll go up here. It should be up by the time people listen to the podcast here, but just kind of doing some random draft studies. And we know that Pittsburgh historically does not tend to draft small schoolers, guys even FCS and below, but certainly D2 and below. And I wanted to really kind of put that to the test and quantify where does Pittsburgh stack up when it comes to drafting or not drafting D2 prospects. We mentioned this on the podcast, I think, last week, and I wondered who the last guy was and went back and checked, and I'll have to double check before the post goes live as we're recording this, but I believe it was Ricardo Coakley from Tusculum in 2004, and I went and compared that to the rest of the NFL to see is that the longest active streak in football of not taking a D2 player or below, D3 as well, in the NFL draft. It is the second longest active streak. Only one longer, based on what I have found so far, is the Washington Commanders, who have not taken one since 1991. So over 30 years that streak's been going on for. But bottom line is Pittsburgh does not draft D2 essentially ever in the last 20 seasons. Can that change this year? You know, we'll see. It's kind of one of those interesting nuggets I'll have when that streak does end. Whenever that occurs, I can make mention of that. But interesting kind of oddity and stat that I found there.
Who can you name some of the most recent names who were drafted D2?
Just in NFL?
In the NFL.
Sure. There were two last year. Jake Witt from Northern Michigan to the Colts. The Colts always are drafting random players from the smallest of schools and crazy gems there. And the LA Rams took Ethan Evans, a punter from Wingate. And there were, I think, four or five in 2022. Joshua Williams from Fayetteville State. Another corner from Valdosta State. So there was the one we talked about a lot in 2021, Quinn Miners, Wisconsin Whitewater, D3 kid. We thought Pittsburgh would have interest in him. They did have interest, but they did not ultimately take him. So those are some of the recent names. It's all laid out in the post.
All right. Good info there. I look forward to reading that when you have it live.
Anything else here, Dave? Any other topics you want to discuss? Von Miller thinks the Bills will trade up for a receiver. Could Pittsburgh be a dance partner to go down from 20 to 28? I threw the scenario out there today. I do find it less likely. It's always, you know, hard to pinpoint one particular team, one particular trade, but at least Von Miller thinks Buffalo is moving on up.
All right. I don't really have much. I haven't really looked deep into what they might need or why they would do as such. So that's just fodder, discussion fodder in my eyes right now because I haven't looked at it really. What'd you think about what Bengals offensive line coach Frank Pollock had to say on the Dave Lapham show? It's always fun when you get not only a recent a position coach, specifically offensive lineman, even if he's just out of the league recently to talk about draft class, but you get one here that's still in the league talking about him. And he seemed pretty genuine overall when talking about some of these guys. So what did you think about his thoughts on Graham Barton and Mims specifically?
Yeah, first of all, like you said, really interesting that he even had this interview. I mean, I just don't know how many coaches are publicly. This was done before free agency. It was done in March, but still, still in the middle of draft season. Talked about Mims and just, he says, quote, he fits in that freak category. They should not make human beings that size. They can move like him. He's insane. And the Bengals are picking right ahead of Pittsburgh, right?
They pick 18th overall right now.
Okay, so you talk about teams might be competing for offensive line help. Where do they sit offensive line? They lost Jonah Williams. They did sign Trent Brown. Of course, have Orlando Brown at left tackle. So they certainly love their big offensive tackles in Brown and both Browns, Orlando and Trent. They're probably looking maybe a bit more interior. So that's where Graham Barton comes in. And Pollock praised Barton for his versatility to play at center, to play left tackle, his effort just seemed to be high on his game overall.
Yeah, but didn't he say that he feels like his position might be more inside?
Yeah, I think because of the lack of length, I had the Mims comment pulled up here, but did at least note the position flex there. But I do think he said that his likely home is to play along the interior.
Yep. I thought there was another quote in here, I guess. He's a guy that played, let's see. I thought he said something about guard in there, but
I think he did. I think he made a mention of center guard. I think he was just trying to say that he's probably going to kick inside, right, which is how he, just given the lack of length there.
All right. That's always fun to see these guys. Once again, position coaches such like, even though it was a couple of weeks ago, chime in on a couple of these guys here.
Yeah, certainly interesting. I would love to hear Pat Meyer give an interview like this, but don't expect that to happen.
Yeah, especially going through as much of the draft class as they went through on that show. So if you get a chance, you can find, we got the got two posts up about it on SteelersDepot.com. One about Barton and Jackson Powers Johnson, and then the other one on the tackles that he talked about in the full episode is what was it on the what podcast was it?
Dave Lapham in the trenches.
Yeah, in the trenches. So it's about a 14-minute segment where they run through the offensive lineman, I think, top to bottom.
Was a report, or I shouldn't say report, interview that Mercer cornerback Tavion McCarthy, you got me, Dave, my lights are flashing here from some storms, so hopefully power doesn't go out. Tavion McCarthy from Mercer had an interview with Justin Mello at Draft Network and talked about he's had great contact with the Steelers. McCarthy went viral for his 44-inch vertical at his pro day. Last month, Pittsburgh had two scouts in attendance at that Mercer pro day in Dennis McGinnis. An intern, Bronson Williams, kind of notable there. McCarthy, unlikely to be drafted given just the small school. He's also pretty short at 5'9", but maybe a name to watch from the undrafted pool of players.
He's the one that about jumped out of the building, didn't he?
Yeah, that was the 44-inch vertical. And Dennis McGinnis, you see that clip right to the left is him, and he got the firsthand view at that crazy jump.
All right, maybe in the next show we'll talk about teams that may or may not need tackles in the top 19 picks. Mm. Why don't we make that our homework? It's a little bit messier because each team has two of them. It took me a full day to compile that that stuff for the center position. So it probably won't be as thorough as of a discussion, but maybe that's a little bit of some homework for us to do of teams, of all 32 teams that could potentially be in the market for a first round tackle.
Yeah, that's a good call. There should be some of them, and so we can go through them as well. Just quick final thought here. Not that I want to get into kind of too much of the maybe drama, you know, small sense it's becoming, but the Shannon Sharp, Russell Wilson back and forth, Sharp taking issue with Wilson's comments about kind of opening doors for black quarterbacks in football, Wilson firing back and saying that was not his intent. Any thoughts there, Dave?
No, that's part of the job that I don't like. I like evaluating players and talking about players more so on the field than I do off the field, unless it revolves around contracts and cap situations and all like that. On the surface, it doesn't feel like, just from what I've read in the context, it to me, it feels a little bit out of context.
From Sharp's end of things? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just not trying. Just not getting what Russell was trying to say, I think, or misinterpreting it.
Right. I don't see any ill intent from what Russell Wilson had to say. I imagine he appreciates history and wasn't trying to take sole credit for being the pioneer of black quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think that was his thought process at all. So I think Sharp didn't even see some of the other comments. He probably read it from somewhere that didn't have the full context. But either way, just as a story, I know Wilson, like, 1 a.m. on Friday night or Saturday morning, tweeted about it and was a bit of a story again, kind of the quote unquote biggest news we've had in this pretty slow weekend.
All right. Shall we get to some reader emails?
Yep. Let's get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right. Mark Alves from Arlington, liked the center draft discussion. Not too long. If I want a short discussion, I'll read a tweet, he says. Plus, I listened to you around 2x playback speed, so running time isn't an issue. Thanks for that, Mark. Let me see if I find some in here. Once again, thank you for everybody that chimed in with this overall, just to give your thoughts on it. Let's see. Another one thanking us for that. I'm trying to find one in here, actually, that has a question. Give me a moment here. I don't have
I do want to mention while you look through that, I believe I mentioned Friday for our next Walk the Mock. I'm actually going to change that to Thursday. It's going to be Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern time. I won't be able to do the Walk the Mock on Friday. So I'll make a note of that for Wednesday's show and tweet it out and put it on YouTube channel. But Thursday at 9 will be the second edition of our Walk the Mock draft.
All right. Here's one from Jeff. Cordner, looks like he says, love the discussion and all like that about the center. He says, one question for you. Do you think the Steelers' approach, not spending much money on undrafted free agents, hurts the team, and any chance this changes in the future with Khan? This has been a big hot button, more so with Alex than it has been with me. So Alex, you reset your thoughts on the Steelers and undrafted free agents, and I'll add a little bit at the end there.
Yeah, it's a thorn in my side for sure. To answer the second question first, it could, of course, but I don't see it changing. It did not change under Omar Khan last year. If there was a time for this model to shift, it'd be under a new regime, quote unquote, a new GM in Khan, and it did not change. And so Pittsburgh will only hand out signing bonuses. They do not offer partial guaranteed base salaries. The NFL has a cap on the amount of signing bonuses you can hand out. What's that number this year, Dave? Is it 100,000, 90,000?
I haven't gotten that from Joel Corey. I want to say it's under 200,000, though.
Okay. Point is, though, so teams are capped in the signing bonus to try not to have crazy signing bonuses given to these undrafted players, where it almost becomes better to be undrafted than it does to become a draft pick. But the way NFL teams work around that is they will offer a partial base salary guarantee. So they will hypothetically give a top undrafted free agent a $50,000 signing bonus and a $100,000 base salary guarantee that does not count against the cap of signing bonus they can allot to undrafted players. Pittsburgh is one of the few teams who does not do that. They will only give out signing bonuses, and they don't even come close to spending the entire cap of their signing bonus. They will usually spend, I don't know, you tell me, Dave, 50, 60,000 in signing bonuses to their pool each year.
They don't get to the top of the pool, I'll tell you that. No. As far as that goes, where I come in on this is as a whole, now here's the thing. You still have those guys that fall through the crack, like the Jalen Warrens, right?
Sure. But I think on the whole, it does put them at a disadvantage.
Sure. It limits it. It limits your target amount of targets by not guaranteeing, you know, not competing in that realm with it. Now, on the flip side, I tried to I tried to formulate a counter argument to this. And the only thing I could come up with is if you're the Steelers, do you want players that aren't so much worried about the guarantee, because if they have confidence in themselves, they know they're going to make the roster and they know they're going to get they know they're going to earn their money anyway. it's a flimsy side of the argument there, but maybe you want guys more hungry and not worried about the guarantee as much as they like the opportunity to come in and compete.
Yeah. I know you're just trying to play devil's advocate. Right.
That's all I got, but it does limit to some aspect your target list.
Yeah. They're never going to get the top undrafted free agents because they're going to go where the money goes, because they've just lost out on the draft opportunity. At least they're going to get paid a little bit for it. And typically, yeah, they're going to go to where, you know, there's a need. But if teams are ponying up good money, they typically have a need at a certain position. If they're giving out, you know, $100,000, you know, partial base salary guarantee. I think Pittsburgh's rationale is two things. A, if you do add up, if you give out a couple $100,000 base salary guarantees, there is a higher risk for dead money if that guy does not work out, does not pan out and make your roster. And there is precedent. You know, if you give one guy $100,000, that next agent will call you and say, hey, you gave this guy this amount of money, come give me at least $80,000. And that toothpaste is hard to put back in the tube. Right. And so if Pittsburgh keeps things down, they're always just going to sell opportunity and coaching staff and not have this turn into a giant money discussion. But money talks, and even Jalen Warren, as he slipped through the cracks, said he signed in Pittsburgh for one reason. They offered him the most amount of signing bonus. It wasn't a ton. It was 12K, but it was more than anybody else. And so he came to Pittsburgh for that reason. He has said that point blank in an interview, I think, during his rookie season. So it does hurt them, but that is the model. Could it change? It could, but there was no sign of it changing last year under Khan. I do not expect it to change this year.
And it doesn't seem like the list of undrafted free agents has shrunk over the years, too. Did it used to be about 16, 17 guys at this team, 14, 15, 16. And now the last couple of years, it's been like 10, 11, 7, something like that.
Six last year, which almost might be good because they're not getting. I mean, they've had some really poor undrafted classes. Yes, they found Warren. But you look at some of the classes, some of those guys don't even make it to camp. I mean, they have not even had guys that will make it to the practice squad or kind of survive the summer. So for a team that's built on so many talented UDFAs throughout their history, it is disappointing, but it is the model they're currently working with.
All right. This one from Mark O'Connor writes in, will you be holding your annual draft competition this year? Yes, we'll get that up on the site for people to do like we do every year there. He said, for those of us who obsessively follow the breadcrumbs you guys throw out in the pre-draft process, it's a massive joy to take part in. He says, P.S. regarding feedback to your 45-minute conversation about centers on the last podcast, I listened to every word. Nobody dives in deeper than you guys. Keep up the awesome work. Thanks for that, Mark. Let's see if I can get another one in here. Okay, let's see here. This one from Seth. I really enjoyed the chatter on the center prospects in the draft. Like y'all have pointed out, some position of need isn't going to get addressed in the early rounds unless they acquire more capital. I'm of the opinion that that a top two wide receiver is a more urgent need than center, and there is more talent there, and it's a higher value position. That's the only position I'm truly panicking about, if it's the one that gets the short end of the early round stick. Do you think it's DEFCON 1 if they end up with Bortolini or Norzad or one of those guys? P.S. I did a little research. Turns out Rook Ahora Ahora is pronounced Ororo. He has here. Do we still have a pronunciation on him? What does Dane? Dane does a good job of putting those in here. What does Dane have?
That's
here?
A good. I think Clemson Sight does a pretty good job. I'm always. I'm so sorry. I hate mispronouncing names. It's just one of those things where you read it all the time. I don't usually listen to the name because if I'm watching,
bad. I'm bad on pronunciations. Even after hearing them 18 times, it took me a long time to learn Chukwuma Okorafor, and now he's gone.
All that time spent wasted.
Let's see here. He has Rook rhymes with Juke. I think I can handle that one.
All right. Good start.
The other one, O-Row-Row-Row.
Just say row three times. O-Row-Row-Row.
O-Row-Row-Row. Okay.
Use it in a sentence, the language of origin. Get our spelling bee on here. But yeah, I just usually, because when you watch all 22, there is no sound. Obviously, even if I'm watching TV tape, right. I don't have all 22. I'm usually not listening to the broadcast. I got something else playing in the background. So it's usually just how I read it, and I just kind of stick with it. So I do appreciate the correction there. May have to learn that name. Row your boat. Okay. Yeah. Row your boat to Pittsburgh. We'll see if that happens on day two.
What do you think about wide receiver? Do you think it's DEFCON 1 if they end up with Bortolini or someone like North? In other words, if they miss out on one of these top three that we've been talking about.
It's just going to scare the heck out of me, Dave, and it should scare this team just not knowing what they're going to get. Maybe the guy works, but a lot of new. It's a big year for this offense. That's where I think you get the Kendrick Green stuff. Not even necessarily from the prospect in terms of limitations, but just from the, here's this rookie who may not be ready to play, but we don't have really a choice and our competition isn't great. And so if it's him or her big, it's just, I mean, I don't want to say it's, you know, the end of the world, but it could be. And if you're saying it could be the end of the world, that's a scary thought.
It would feel a lot better if you had a guy like Mitch Morse that you had signed, you know?
Yeah. Or even just some other veteran center who had played some center before in an NFL game.
Another one here from Taylor Carpenter in Athens, Ohio. Great discussion last show on centers, a dilemma, blah, blah, blah. You guys spoke a lot about the Steelers might trade up in round two to go and get a center. Should they pass on the position in round one? Can you guys take a minute to discuss who the Steelers might move up for in round two if they were to take a center in round one? Tackle, wide receiver, or corner. All right. He wants to know that, let's say the Steelers address the center position in round one. Oh, boy. The fact that we even got to the point we were talking about a trade up in round two for a center is pretty monumental for this podcast, I think. But who would you – what position could you see this team trading up for in round two if they took a center round one? My thoughts immediately go to tackle.
I go to wide receiver. I don't know how many tackles are going to be there that would fit. I don't think you have to trade up for a Blake Fisher and maybe not even a Rosengarten. But I think if you want, say, a Pearsall or Leggett or someone they've shown interest in that day two pool, I think that's what it would be. But I think if they take a center round, I think if they trade up in round two, it'd be more likely for a center than anybody else. If they took a center in round one, I think the odds of them trading up aren't zero, but aren't as high as if they took a tackle, a receiver, or corner in round one and we're looking for that center.
I would agree. I think the whole reason we got to that point of talking about potentially trading up in round two for a center is because of there perceivably being just those top three and then falling off from there. And then the amount of teams that could potentially be in the market. Now, look, you could do this exercise and, you know, we just talked about, we might try to address the tackle needs in the first round here in this next show and all like that. You can drive your app yourself absolutely crazy trying to come up with which teams could do what. And then you have to go down the rabbit holes of what teams might trade up ahead. You know, the options, the discussion becomes endless and fruitless on so many levels because you just don't, you know, it's hard enough to even predict who might be on the board for all teams staying put there. But I will echo what Alex just said there. It feels like if they were going to trade up at all in round two, it would be for a center. Now, look, they obviously could go up and get whatever position and all, but it feels like center would be the position that they would need to go get if they did in that round.
Agreed. And that's kind of where my focus of the discussion, and I think an article that I'd written centered around, pun intended, I guess, but I think it would be centered if they make a move up.
This one from Tito writes in, Colbert and his index card of 50 names is one of my favorite things. That also meant he really zeroed in on guys a position. I think less pro days for Con Tomlin means they're home studying more players. Then add that visitors at offensive tackle, center, wide receiver, cornerback, and defensive line all provide first round options. I think that opens the door for best player available and more flexibility if trade down into the 20s there. So I guess he's thinking maybe the pro day thing will be put to test in the first round. He's thinking also maybe there's a potential of this team trading down from 20, which would be pretty monumental thing to happen if they did, based on historical aspects of it, but not impossible, as I like to say. So that's Tito's thoughts on that, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, things are open. I you know, with the pro days, I'm trying to think about what to make of that, why they were only at four. I mean, I don't know. And I think whenever Tomlin and Khan speak to the media before the draft, they probably will be asked about it, maybe even comment on it themselves. They typically recap the pro days that they attended. I think it was just maybe more scheduling. Again, you put the league meetings smack dab in the middle of some big pro days that week. I hate how it's got to be a better way to do that. I think it's a bad system overall. And then you just factor in, again, the Big 12 becoming a conference pro day, so that eliminates some big schools alone. Does that feel like it was a success? Did any GM, did any head coach go to that Big 12 pro day? Do we have any idea on that?
I was just looking. I don't remember if I built out a list of that. I didn't sit there and notate it. And nothing, yeah, if it was, nobody comes to mind.
It was like no buzz on that entire 3-day week. Because, I mean, I watched the video of at least one of the workouts. It was just like a combine. I mean, which is, I know it's a pro day similar to that, but it's not really the same structure. And you have to wait for the other 10 players in your group to go through drills. You can't focus on one guy. There was almost no buzz about it nationally, at least when you come to a pro day. You'll have ESPN send their cameras to that pro day workout, and all eyes are on that, and it's kind of at least focused for a day. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the reaction is to scouts and teams and players, but it did not seem like it was as successful as I thought it might be.
I hope they deem it unsuccessful.
Maybe I'm wishing a little bit here, but yeah, I hope they scrap it. I don't know if they will, but I think that was, you know, you have fewer pro days this year because all a giant conference is now one pro day.
Unfortunately, I have a feeling that we're going to see more of these combined, but hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah, and we'll see if the streak stands true. If there's a year for it to snap, it's this year. When you're only at four pro days, it naturally limits your pool. There was a year where Kevin Colbert was at 11, 12, 13. Typically, they're at 7 or 8. Four is obviously a smaller number.
Be interesting to hear maybe them asked about that with the upcoming Tomlin Con pre-draft press conference. Do we know? We don't know what that is yet, right?
No, it's typically pretty close to draft day, but we don't have a date on that.
All right. Okay. We got through a lot. Once again, I got a lot of emails in here, just people chiming in on the center discussion. We certainly do appreciate that. We just can't get to reading all of them on the show here. So, Alex, you and I will be back on Wednesday, and we'll have a lot of different things, I'm sure, to talk about, especially as the draft gets closer here as well. So in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button and follow the directions that way. So appreciate everybody putting up with us doing this on a late Sunday night. We should be back on course on Wednesday morning with the next show. So until then, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.